The Honorable Chief Justice Pickering presiding.
Thank you. This is the time and place set, our virtual place set, for oral argument in this case of State versus 4th Judicial District Court, Martinez, 80093. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
On behalf of Mr. Martinez, we are ready to proceed.
Very well. Justice Perigary is not shown on any of the feeds, but he is watching this via webcast. And there was no reply filed in this matter, so there will be no rebuttal argument. You each have 15 minutes aside. Can you each see the clock on your screens?
The state can see that, Your Honor, yes.
The defense counsel can see the clock.
Okay, very well. Let's begin.
May it please the court. My name is Daniel Roche. I'm a deputy district attorney. I'm in the Elko County District Attorney's Office, and I represent the petitioner in this matter. The state filed this original petition to seek clarification for the unit of prosecution for NRS 202-360, which criminalizes the ownership or possession of firearms by prohibited persons. Technically, I suppose this would be an issue of first impression. It has been raised before and was decided by an unpublished order of a panel prior to 2016, and therefore that case has no precedential value. And so while practitioners are aware of its existence and it raises an issue, the state sought clarification. The case at hand arose because the real party in interest was arrested after firing a handgun into a strip club in West Wendover. And after exchanging gunfire with law enforcement, a search was conducted of his vehicle that contained an AK-47 shotgun, a rifle, and a second handgun. And based on those facts, the state charged this individual with being a felon in possession of a firearm, five counts. The real party in interest filed a motion to consolidate those into one count, and the district court granted that motion. That's what brings us here today. The state's position is that the statutory language barring ownership or possession of any firearm in the singular is clear and unambiguous and allows prosecution for each individual firearm that a prohibited person is found in possession of. It's pretty straightforward argument. That's the state's main position, is that the legislature had a choice between a singular or plural word in the statute. They selected firearm, which is singular, and that indicated sufficiently for the court the intention of the statute is to allow prosecution for an individual for each individual firearm that a prohibited person is found owning or in possession of. The alternative interpretation of that statute would render that decision by the legislature meaningless. It would basically treat any firearm as being the same thing as any firearms, plural, and therefore doesn't give effect to the decision of the legislature to use that phrase, any firearm in the statute. Even if this court, and unless there are any questions on that position, even if the court disagrees and concludes that the phrase any firearm is ambiguous as to the unit of prosecution, the state nevertheless asserts that this court should find that the statute permits an individual count for each firearm based on prior case law that provides that when there is an ambiguity, that ambiguity should be resolved by looking to legislative history, to other statutes, and to cases from other jurisdictions to try and resolve that ambiguity prior to applying the rule of lenity, which is what the real party interest would prefer, is that we get to a point where we apply the rule of lenity and conclude that he can only be prosecuted for one count, no matter how many firearms.
What do you say to the fact that the federal firearms statute is quite similar to Nevada's, and there appears to be unanimous federal circuit court case law holding any in the context of this firearm possession by a felon statutes?
The response to that,
if it's one place and one time, even if you have five guns, it's a single offense.
That has been quite consistently held by the federal courts. There are some reasons why this court should not follow those decisions. One of those is that the statute is not identical, even though it's similar. But I think the main reason that the state asserts that this court, in deciding Nevada law, should not follow those decisions is that Nevada's statutes contain clear indications, both by the citizens of Nevada and the legislature, that there is a strong, strong public policy interest in prohibiting felons from the possession of firearms. That was first indicated in 2016 by a ballot measure, and then in 2019, the legislature reaffirmed that when it passed the Background Check Act. And at the beginning of those statutes were in the same chapter of NRS 202, the legislature quite clearly stated that there are strong public policy reasons in Nevada, at least, that the citizens and the legislature are in agreement, that there are overwhelming policy considerations that prohibited persons should not possess firearms.
Well, Council, yes? It's Justice Stevens. Well, why would we treat this differently than we did in Castaneda? Were you talking about, you know, pornography, child pornography, and certainly there's a strong public interest in people not having child pornography? Why would we treat this case differently?
I think there's several reasons, but the strongest one for me, when you look at the Castaneda decision and the Wilson decision that preceded it, we're in an age where digital media is prevalent. So we can look at the individual words that were argued in Castaneda, but there's an underwriting policy consideration that I think everyone can recognize, that in an age of digital media and digital storage, an individual who downloads 100 images from the internet at one time, there's a strong policy reason for not wanting that person to be punished by 100 counts of possession of child pornography.
So if he had 100 photographs, physical photographs in his pocket, would the public policy interest be different? So that should be 100 counts?
It would depend on the circumstances. I mean, one of the things that, if you look at those federal cases that were just mentioned that apply the federal firearm statute, U.S. v. Bullock talked about the fact that those cases are all dealing with simultaneous possession of a similar item. So if the statute criminalizes solely possession of child pornography and that person obtained 100 pictures, and all we have is evidence that they possess those pictures and no evidence of how they obtained them or where they came from, then I think that would be significant. And in light of Castaneda, I don't think you could resolve it differently. I mean, this court has already held that under Castaneda, that statute means what it means. Even if in Castaneda they found that there was that ambiguity based on the presence of the word any in the statute. And then we look to legislative history, public policy and reason, other statutes. We have to resolve that ambiguity and try and do that. And this court has done that in other cases that didn't involve child pornography. They did that in Washington with respect to the discharge of a firearm, and they did that most recently in Andrews when it came to possession of controlled substances. They resolved that ambiguity, looked at the statutes, and decided that even though that said any controlled substance, it didn't mean that they could all be aggravated, that the unit of prosecution was separate for each individual controlled substance. So that's the difference under Castaneda. The first is that there's a difference because there's no underlying public policy consideration regarding the commonality of possession of pornography by digital means. You can't download a shotgun, an AR-15, a rifle and several Rugers off the internet and just have them immediately. And so there's a public policy consideration there. But the second thing is you look to the statutes. And Nevada statutes have a clear public policy statement in them, which isn't common when you look to statutes. But NRS 202 has a clear public policy statement about not wanting felons to own firearms.
Let me interrupt you. Excuse me. This is Justice Pickering. And the struggle I'm having is every criminal statute embodies a public policy, a judgment of the legislature that it's going to criminalize conduct. And to my mind, you have a statute. They could have written it in a way that would clearly express that each firearm possessed constitutes a separate act of possession and therefore is penalized separately, but they didn't. Instead, they chose to mirror federal law and express it in the terms that they did. And I'm troubled by the idea that we should look at the strength of the policy in determining the meaning of the statute. That seems to me to be pretty amorphous. And if we get it wrong and we said this is, you know, in one place at one time a person has five firearms and he or she is a felon, that's a kind of a status offense that they're there with five firearms in one place at one time. I don't know that the multiple firearms present in one place at one time increases the risk, but certainly if the legislature wanted to penalize that, it could have, and it didn't in clear terms. I'm struggling to understand what in the wording of this statute supports multiple charges for a single moment in time of possessing multiple firearms.
Well, there's two things that I would say to that. The first one is that the original use of the word any in that statute was 1925. So it's been
What year did you say, sir?
I believe 1925 is when that statute was first passed. It wasn't until, and at the time it only prohibited felons from possessing firearms that could be concealed on their person. That was defined as firearms less than 12 inches of a barrel. It wasn't until 1985 that it was changed to include all, basically, firearms. So we're applying case law that has all arisen well after the time the legislature actually got that. The other thing is that the state's position is that they did indicate that by using a singular firearm rather than firearms in the statute. And the third thing I would say is that in other statutes in NRS 202, they've specified one or more firearms. So anytime they wanted to consolidate it as a unit of prosecution to include one or more as the unit of prosecution, they have explicitly done that. I believe it's
Mr. Roche. This is Justice Kadish in Carson City. I know it's sometimes hard to find the right square on the screen. The fact that this statute, unlike some of the others in the other cases where we've had to look at this any language issue, this one prohibits not just possession, but it also prohibits ownership. It says, shall not own or have in his or her possession or under his custody or control any firearm. So what's your view of, like, in this case, apparently there were, as I understand it, like five firearms found in a vehicle with this defendant. And if he also had two firearms in his house that he owned, how would you, what's your position about whether they could be charged and how that would work?
I would say that they could be charged because they weren't simultaneously possessed. I think the cases that we're talking about, at least the federal circuit courts that have interpreted the use of the word any in the federal firearm statute, have all mentioned that it's in context of simultaneous possession. And in U.S. v. Bullitt, the Fifth Circuit noted that if there were facts that showed that these were separate possessions, that would allow separate prosecution.
And there's that's also consistent with Castaneda. That Castaneda holds that same way. Are there, sorry, this is Justice Silver. Are there any cases out there, here one's found in a trunk, one's found in a floorboard, one's found on, they're found in different areas of the car, and what I'm getting to is distance. Are there any cases that you're aware of that talk about, you know, yes, here arguably this defendant constructively possessed these five firearms, but actual possession, there's five different firearms in five different locations within the car?
Well, I think that's a consideration, and maybe it goes to policy, but the distinction between digital media and firearms is applicable there. Even though we don't have specific evidence that a person possessed or moved these firearms separately, it's not reasonable to expect that they obtained all these firearms in the same transaction and had them together all the time. There's an inherent fact that they, at some point, they had them separately. That kind of weighs in favor of allowing separate prosecutions. You can't obtain an arsenal of weapons all in one fell swoop. I mean, I suppose there's some factual scenario where that happens. But when you're dealing with a felon who's in possession of a firearm, that's not how they obtain those firearms. And that weighs in favor of allowing separate prosecutions.
I guess I was going to the fact that they weren't all found in the trunk lined up together. They were found in different areas of the car distance-wise. That make a difference.
I think it does. And my time is up, but I would say that in this case, he used one of them separately. There were four found in the vehicle. The other one he had used to shoot at the law enforcement officer, so it was in a separate location. I think that should allow a separate prosecution. Submit it to the court.
May I ask a quick question?
Of course.
Did you make that alternative argument below, and how was that received by the court? Did you say, I don't think they should be consolidated as a matter of policy because each one should be separate, but in any event, as Justice Silver alluded to, they were separate and distinct acts of possession, which also are capable of being separately charged?
I don't think that was raised below. I don't recall. I unfortunately was not involved in any way in this case in the district court, but I don't recall that argument was raised there.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much.
Hey, please, the court. Counsel, I'm Benjamin Gauman, Elko County Deputy Public Defender. I represent Anthony Martinez on this original proceeding. Mr. Roche is right. Technically, it's a case of first impression regarding this specific statute. And Mr. Roche argues the statute is plain and unambiguous and doesn't cite any persuasive authority anywhere to indicate that this phrase, any firearm, is plain and unambiguous. Moreover, Mr. Roche comes to this court seeking clarification. He comes to the wrong body asking for clarification. It's the legislature that should be clarifying this. They've had all the time to clarify that the Grauman's the individual firearm, and yet has not done so, notwithstanding all this persuasive authority that indicates that any firearm does not indicate that the Grauman is the individual firearm. Now, we've heard talk about the word any preceding firearm in the Nevada statute. If the word a rather than any is there, that could change the whole analysis, and the legislature's had an opportunity just to do something as simple as substitute the word A for any. They haven't done that. Other states have had the word A preceding firearm, but Nevada has not done that over the course of this statute's history. Now, the state is, in essence, not explicitly, but implicitly asking the court to rewrite the statute, even though the legislature should be doing that. And this isn't the only active case where this district attorney's office is, in essence, wanting the court to rewrite a statute. There's a case, State versus William Lose, that's handled by Mr. Roche's office, not Mr. Roche specifically, where they're asking, in essence, to rewrite a statute of limitations statute. But the rule of lenity does apply here. I mean, we have other courts, and I'll go through these other states, that have dealt with the rule of lenity and the phrase any firearm, and have consistently ruled that the Grauman's not the individual firearm. So has Mr. Martinez on notice that it's five separate felonies for five firearms, when in fact persuasive authority indicates that the grawl was not the individual firearm when a state uses the phrase any firearm rather than a firearm. Now, the state cites Washington versus State. That concerns the statute regarding discharging a firearm into a structure. And we see the word any preceding discharge. So the state argues, well, we got the word any before discharge, and therefore we should follow Washington and indicate that each firearm is a separate felony. The problem is that in the discharging of a firearm into an occupied structure, you have the word any, but you have discharge being a verb. So the discharge, let's say you hypothetically fire five bullets into an occupied structure, yes, clearly that would be five separate felonies for each and every discharge of the firearm. So Washington doesn't get the state very far. And the state cites Andrews versus State, which cited the Castaneda decision from 2016 from this court, as it has been discussed earlier. But in Andrews specifically, that dealt with the drug trafficking law under the old version of our drug trafficking law in the state of Nevada, which indicated that if one possesses, for instance, 8 grams of cocaine along with 8 grams of heroin, that those can be two separate low-level trafficking offenses under the old trafficking law. Now,
Mr. Gellner, I'm sorry, what? This is Justice Silver. Why isn't this case akin to that? What, I mean, you've got possession of drugs and different types of drugs, and that's a unit of prosecution. And here you've got possession of firearms, different firearms. Why can't that be the measure of prosecution under stare decisis?
Because in the drug trafficking laws in this jurisdiction, you had cross-references to two other revised statutes, the first being 453.3383. And in that statute, it says for purposes of the drug trafficking statute, the weight of the controlled substance as represented by the person selling or delivering it is determinative if the weight as represented is greater than the actual weight of the controlled substance. So focusing on that statute, you have two references to the controlled substance. Now, while
let me interrupt then and ask you, if you had multiple controlled substances, methamphetamine, cocaine, not marijuana anymore, and PCP, and you didn't have them in amounts at trafficking, it's just straight possession, how is it not the same as in this case? If you had methamphetamine, cocaine, and you had PCP, you would have 3 counts of possession of controlled substance. Why isn't it the same for this case with 3 different, an AK-47, whatever, SK, whatever, and a handgun?
Because under the ex felon possession of firearms statute, you don't see the cross reference to other statutes which use the firearm, unlike the controlled substance. And 453.3383 isn't the only other cross reference statute. You have 453.3405, which that's the prohibition against granting probation in a trafficking case, which uses the phrase a controlled substance. So you have the cross referencing to other statutes in the trafficking statute, whereas you don't have that with the ex felon possession statute. I agree. If the phrase any firearm appears with the firearm, that could change the whole analysis, but we don't have that here. It's distinct from the controlled substance statutes. As indicated before, when we look at federal authority, all 12 circuit courts of appeal have applied the rule of lenity, the most recent being U.S. versus Berrecchia, Berrecchia. That was the last circuit to decide that, and that was in 1999. We're talking over 20 years ago, the last circuit to decide this issue decided it in favor of the rule of lenity. And Mr. Roche's argument about firearm being the singular doesn't get them anywhere, because that is how the federal statute is written. So that argument from the state should be rejected, and it's not the only federal authority. The Mann Act, which deals with the White Slave Traffic Act, that deals with the prohibition of transporting any women or girl for the purpose of prostitution or debauchery for any other immoral purpose. We're talking U.S. Supreme Court authority backs the defense position that the gravamen is not an individual girl or woman, that if somebody is transporting women in the plural or girls in the plural, that is not a separate felony for each and every girl and or woman. Now, does the state cite federal authority in its petition? The state does not do that, and that makes sense because the federal precedent does not support the state's position in this regard. And we can look at individual states. Not all ex-felon in possession of firearm statutes are written alike. Now, going back to what I said about the distinction between A and any, other states have used the word A and have come to the conclusion that the gravamen is the individual firearm, and you can charge five separate felonies for possessing five different firearms.
Counsel, hi. It's Justice Kadish in Carson City. This particular statute doesn't just prohibit possession, like possession of controlled substance or possession of child pornography. It also prohibits ownership or possession. So if a person who is an ex-felon is, you know, is in one place at a traffic stop or whatever, and at the same time he owns five firearms that are in five different places, would that not justify five different counts because he owns five firearms?
Well, if the statute were written clearer in that point, I would argue perhaps that it could be five separate felonies, but the statute clearly does not indicate that because there is that ambiguity. So I would argue the answer to that would be no until it's rewritten to actually indicate that it's five separate felonies for possessing five different firearms.
So if he owns five firearms, and whether they're in the same place or in different places, your view is that's one count?
I think we'd have to look to see if they're separate transactions. I mean, if we're talking about simultaneous ownership, if that's the theory, we would argue that's one felony. But if we're talking about separate transactions altogether...
Well, what do we know about whether there were separate transactions in this case? We haven't had a trial yet, correct?
That's correct. We have not had a trial, and Mr. Roche had indicated the facts to indicate that a gun was purportedly used, and then there's four other firearms involved in the car in question here. We don't believe that indicates that this should be dealt with differently, and especially when the argument wasn't made in the lower court.
So do we have any evidence about when or how he came to own or have possession of these firearms?
In terms of this incident case, no, Your Honor. Justice Kadish, basically they proceed that on the theory that this is being possessed. That's really the essence of this prosecution, being possessed, not necessarily that it was owned.
If he came into possession at different times, if he brought one from his home, made one stop and grabbed a gun there, and made another stop and grabbed a gun there, and so on, and then he gets stopped when he has five in his car or four in his car, whatever it is, would that still only justify one count?
Well, I think we're looking at a hypothetical situation. I think we have to look to see there's some breakage here between transactions, and it's really hard to answer that when the state's proceeding on the theory that this was simultaneous transactions. I think it's fact-intensive inquiry in terms of whether or not they're separate felonies. You have to look at whether they're separate transactions, and they're not proceeding with that theory in the instant case.
So, okay, go on, Justice Silver.
Going back to what I had asked the state, here you've got different locations within a vehicle. They're all different locations. Why isn't that enough for distance-wise? How does that become a simultaneous transaction, or how does that become a simultaneous possession? I get it's one car, but it's five different locations.
If we state that it's five separate felonies to have five firearms in a car, where would we draw the line? I mean, would we say that if a firearm's on one seat and one's on another seat, that would be two felonies, whereas if they're touching each other, that'd be one felony? I don't believe the state has shown that there's separate felonies here based on the facts of the case. It's simultaneous.
Location is kind of what Justice Kadish is getting at. If you had a house, you have a work, and in your car, those would be three different possessions, is what you're saying, because the distance, they're not touching. There's a distance there. Then you could get three possession ex-felon firearm counts. Is that what you're saying? Distance matters?
No, there's no line to be drawn in terms of distance, but I think in terms of the instant case, We're talking about simultaneous possession is what the theory of the state is proceeding under. Now, the Nevada legislature's had all the opportunity in the world to have this clarified. We can use the word a rather than any. I mean, like New Hampshire and Maryland, those are two states that have used the word a, and those aren't the only two states. I mean, Indiana, Iowa, Louisiana have also used the word a preceding firearm, but Nevada has not conformed its statute to other states. In Washington state, that's the state that has the most clearly defined gravamen. In that particular statute, it's annotated revised code of Washington 9.41.040. But the subsection 7 says there that each firearm unlawfully possessed under this section shall be a separate offense. That was enacted in Washington state in 1995. So Nevada can get guidance from other states about how to specifically define the gravamen as the individual firearm, and yet to this very day, they have not done that whatsoever. But yet there's two states that we've cited in the answer to the petition, North Carolina and Virginia, that have indicated that when you have the phrase any firearm, there's an ambiguity, the rule of lenity applies, and therefore the gravamen's not the individual firearm, it's a disarming of the felon. And Florida has decided the same way. There's other states as well. We have states like Georgia, in Ohio, Illinois, and Hawaii. How many states has the prosecuting authority cited to indicate that the phrase any firearm is unambiguous? We don't have any persuasive authority cited by opposing counsel to indicate it's plain and unambiguous. In fact, states have sometimes had to change their laws. California is a perfect example, along with Illinois. Those are two states that used to define the gravamen as a felon, into the disarming of the felon rather than the individual firearm, the legislatures reacted and changed their statutes accordingly. So when we look at the persuasive authority between all 12 circuit courts of appeal, as well as all these states dealing with the phrase any firearm, the gravamen has been the disarming of the felon, and based on the lack of persuasive authority to support state's position, we ask that this court apply the rule of lenity, and we ask that the state's petition for mandamus and or prohibition relief be denied accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions in Carson City?